You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Monster House presents.
This episode includes coverage of suicide. Self-harm is a serious problem, and one of the best things you can do if you're struggling with such thoughts is to reach out and talk to someone. In the United States, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline can be reached by dialing 988. If you're struggling, please seek help. We care about our listeners and want you to be around for many years to hear stories about monsters, science facts, and, of course, terrible puns. Thanks. You can enjoy extended commercial-free versions of this show by joining us at patreon.com/monstertalk, all one word, M-O-N-S-T-E-R-T-A-L-K. For as little as $2 a month, you can enjoy longer interviews, unbleeped language, and bonus episodes exclusive for patrons. And if $2 a month is not workable for you, but you still want to help out, be sure and leave us a positive review on your podcasting platform of choice. iTunes reviews in particular can help bring in new listeners, and your positive reviews really make a difference. If you want to learn other ways to help out, visit monstertalk.org/support, where you can find even more ways to help keep this show going. Thank you to all of you who are supporting us with your hard-earned money and valuable time. We are humbled and grateful and hope that we always live up to or even exceed your expectations.
Now, what I'm about to tell you is true if you want to hear it.
I do want to hear it.
You do want to hear it. Then I'll tell you. I was never superstitious.
I'll give you a ride.
But then something happened in my life which scared the hell out of me. And for something like that to happen to me is something that I can't understand to this day.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stoltzner.
We've recently been looking at ghostly hitchhiker legends, and in this episode, Karen brings us a creepy tale from her childhood that is both a strange twist on the original formulation of the legend, and also one that comes to us from a big and small screen icon from the 60s all the way through the 90s, the bald Greek lollipop-sucking phenomenon, Telly Savalas. Stand by as we take a wild ride with Mr. Savalas into the Monster Talk Zone.
Monster Talk.
Recording, sir. Yep.
Outstanding. So, it looks like once again, we're going to be delving into the endless treasure trove of things that scared the crap out of us when we were kids.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Yes. It's exactly what I was going to say. And we're joined by Matthew Baxter today as well, because he has a love for this particular story too.
Oh, cool.
And okay. You, I think, Blake, hadn't heard of it.
No. I'm about 4 weeks into knowing about this, something like that. I didn't know much about this at all. This was all new. And I never heard of this show, but I have since tracked it down and added it to my collection.
So today we're going to talk about Telly Savalas' ghost story. So when you said you hadn't seen the show before, I thought you meant Kojak. But no, I think you mean The Extraordinary.
I do mean The Extraordinary.
Yeah, and I don't expect you to have heard of that one. Yeah, this is an interesting TV show. And so I would recommend that our listeners go and check out The Extraordinary, because it's a fun paranormal TV show that's starring the actor Warwick Moss. And when I was a kid, I remember watching an episode of this, and there was a story that Telly Savalas told. And I thought it was really interesting because it's a kind of vanishing hitchhiker legend.
Yeah.
Although this one's unique because it's the reverse vanishing hitchhiker legend. So it's, in this case, it's the driver and not the hitchhiker who's the ghost.
Quite peculiar.
Yeah, I like these kind of reverse stories.
Before we dive in on the story, should we briefly mention who Telly Savalas is?
I think so. I think a lot of our listeners will have grown up with him or know of him. And I didn't really watch Kojak when I was a kid, but my father was an avid fan. And so, yeah, he was an actor. He did a lot of other things too. He had a degree in psychology, and he was a world-class poker player as well.
Wow.
He was a lifeguard at some point and a motorcycle racer. So he's appeared in lots of different shows and films, The Birdman of Alcatraz, and even a Bond film, a James Bond film.
Yeah, he played Blofeld for one Majesty film, yeah.
So that's he was the villain.
Yeah. And he I think he wasn't he in the Dirty Dozen? I think he was. Wasn't he
he was
the sort of crazy psycho guy.
Yes.
You know, if you're going to be an actor, being named Telly is good, but maybe Motion Picture Savalas would have done him more service, you know?
Well, what he's most famous for anyway, I think that most of our listeners will be familiar with the show Kojak. So the 1970s show where he played a lollipop sucking New York cop, Lieutenant Theo Kojak. So, yeah, I think that's where most people will know of him. So I was really surprised just knowing his character. He just seems like a no-nonsense kind of a guy. But to hear that he had a ghost story was really interesting to me. Now, we have typed out a transcript of the story as it's told on The Extraordinary, and Matt is going to read this to us, and he's promised me that he's not going to do a Long Island kind of New York Telly Savalas accent, right, Matt?
It is a promise that I may or may not be able to keep. The true problem with this is the way that, you know, when I transcribed it, I can only hear it that way, but I will try not to deliver it that way. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
Now, are you going to do a straight through read? Will I be doing my apply the filter I do where I let people know we're doing a quote? Or
well, you could do that. We also could, if you want, do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 and
just talk through it.
stop and talk about it as we're going. And
that's fine.
I should just tell it.
Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. Okay. I'll listen.
So what about who's going to do the ghost voice?
You.
I'm going to have to be switching registers. So let me tell you something.
The ghost, this is, I don't want to spoil this. Maybe I should wait till we get into the episode. But in professional wrestling, there was a character who was sort of a manager character, and his name, he was a mortician slash wrestling manager, and his name was Paul Bearer. Okay. And he worked with The Undertaker and Kane and had these crazy WWE storylines, but he talked exactly like this ghost does. And it's so annoying and weird and disturbing.
I'm going to have to go and check that out now.
Yeah. I could throw a clip in here when we get to the actual, but let's go.
Cool.
All right. Here we go. Now, what I'm about to tell you is true, if you want to hear it. You want to hear it? Okay. Then yeah. I was never superstitious.
I'll give you a ride.
That's pretty accurate.
Perfect.
But then something happened in my life which scared the hell out of me. And for something like that to happen to me is something that I can't understand. To this day. God knows how many years ago. Let me think now. 58, 59. Now that's a lot of years ago now. I just left off a date. Beautiful young girl since left us. And it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going home to Long Island after dropping her off. And what happened? I ran out of gas. And, you know, I go to this White Castle restaurant. And he says, is there a gas station open? And he says, yeah. He says, you walk through the woods. He says, get on the Grand Central Parkway. Take it to the Cross Island Parkway. He says, there's a gas station there open all night. Okay, sir. I start walking through the woods, but a wooded area. And as I'm doing that, I hear a voice say, I'll give you a ride. Turn around, and there's this guy in the Cadillac.
It's old.
And I didn't hear the Cadillac. You hear the voice, and what do you see? I see a guy in a white suit, and I hear a feminine voice. Okay, I'll give you a lift. I said, hey, that's very nice. I said, I'm going to a gas station. We get to the gas station, talking very nice, and I'm fumbling around in my pockets, and he says, I'll lend you a dollar. Well, I didn't ask for it. And the truth is, I was broke. And I said, well, look, I says, you know, I work for the State Department. And well, anyway, give me your address. All right. Allow me to mail it to you because I'm very embarrassed. Anyway, I go there. I get a can. I pay for the gas. I put the gas in the car. We start driving back to my car. And I thought it was very nice of him. And then out of the clear blue sky, he says, I know I'm not going to mention the name. I know. So it's a baseball player. We weren't talking baseball. And I said, who is he? He says, well, he's a utility infielder for the Boston Red Sox. Oh, it's so bizarre that he would say it in the spookiest voice I ever heard. He kept driving, get to my car, put the gasoline. He pushes me to get it started. My car starts. I thank him very much. All in all, it's a very lovely experience. Someone to help you out like that. No incident whatsoever. Go home, go to work in the morning, get out in the afternoon. This headlight in the Journal American. So-and-so dead. The guy he mentioned in that very spooky voice. Age 26. Young. Under very mysterious circumstances. Autopsy and all that stuff. Great Scott, what a frightening coincidence. I go home and I says, hey, Ma, isn't that funny? My mother, I think, was part witch. I explained it to her. She says, yeah, well, tell you strange things do happen. Then I remember he gave me that piece of paper for me to send a buck to. And I look at it, and there beside the address, there's a telephone number. Okay, pick it up. I call the number. Jimmy's Bar. Oh, I said, can I speak to Mr. Cullen, please? Who? Mr. Cullen. Just a minute. Woman gets on the phone. Who's calling? Hi, may I speak to Mr. Cullen, please? He's not here. When do you expect him? Who is this? I says, well, I was with Mr. Cullen last night. He gave me this telephone number and said I could reach him. She says, look, you son of a so-and-so. I don't know what you're talking about. You're talking about my husband, and he's been dead for 2 years. Anyway, I couldn't let it go. I did get in touch with the woman again. I did meet her in New York. She came down from Boston, you know. This is a little too weird. The clothes I described were the clothes he was buried in. The piece of paper that he gave me signed James Cullen. Well, she brought a letter that he wrote her when he was in the Army. It had Jimmy on it. Outside of that, the signatures, identical. There was only one thing that was different. I said, he had a high voice. And she said, oh, no. She said he had a deep voice like yours. Ah, that meant he killed himself this way, right through the voice box, whatever. Anyway, the story happened to a guy like me. And as I say, it's been haunting me now for close to 40 years. End scene.
Nice. Yeah.
Well done. I could hear you trying to slip into the act.
I was trying to slip out of it.
Yeah.
It just was just coming on so naturally. I was channeling Telly at times.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it a great story? I think it's just so creepy.
It is.
And if you go and watch the video on The Extraordinary, it is even creepier. They do this reenactment, and I mean, it's kind of cheesy at the same time, but it's a good story. And Matt and I found an earlier version of it because I thought at first maybe this is the first and only time he told this story. But we found this earlier version. It was a TV host, Bill Boggs, had interviewed Savalas in London back in 1976. And it was interesting because there were a few discrepancies in the story. Savalas said that this happened at 3 a.m., not 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And he also said that Jimmy Cullen had been dead 3 years, not 2 years. And he kept saying every word is true.
Yeah. And yeah, which is always a red flag when someone keeps saying, oh, every word is true. It's all true.
It's true. Like, yeah, based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he seemed earnest when he was telling it, but it was just a little suspicious that he kept justifying it that way.
Yeah, yeah. But memories do change. I mean, we've certainly seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, over the span of years from that first time he told it to the last time he told it, there wasn't much different. In fact, parts of it were word for word, which is suspicious as
well.
It
is suspicious, yeah.
In itself. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about some of the characters in this story and what's kind of going on behind the scenes. And so I've seen a couple of listen to a few other podcasts where they've talked about this topic, and everyone's really kind of retold the story. It's like there's not really much to say about whether this happened or not. So we thought we'd do some research into the story and just see what we could find. And there's really not that much out there, but we did as much digging as we could. And so he mentions the utility infielder that the strange man had referred to. And doing some digging, it seems like it would have been a baseball player by the name of Harry Aganis. He was known as the Golden Greek, and he played for the Boston Red Sox and died at the very young age of 26. And that was June 27th, 1955. But he didn't die under suspicious circumstances, as Savalas says. He'd suffered a pulmonary embolism, so he had a bout of pneumonia and then developed a blood clot, which killed him. So a lot of people will say, oh, they both had this Greek background, so there's some kind of mystical connection. Between the two of them. Yeah. But it's from this claim, it seems that it suggests that the events would have taken place on that date or around that date, which was June 27th. So 1955, not 1958 or 59, as Savalas says, because he said that he saw the news about the sports star's death in a magazine called the Journal American, and he'd seen that the next day. So this is something that I can't see anyone else has turned up, but it appears that Savalas was actually married at this time. So he talks about having been on a date, but he was married. He'd been married to his college sweetheart, Catherine Nicolaides. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So they got married in 1948 and they didn't get divorced until 1957. So in 1955, he was still married. Therefore, he was cheating on his wife on this date. And so Matt did some digging and found out that he was, in fact, having an affair with actress Joan Hackett.
Yeah, so when he mentioned, that she's no longer with us, that fits her profile as well. She did die in the 80s.
Wow.
She was in East Harlem. So it coincides with him driving back out to Long Island.
Perhaps this is why he was being vague about the date and the year and said that it was 58 or 59. And he did marry again, not Joan Hackett, but another woman in 1960.
He's changing the dates in the story so that his date is after he's divorced. So he's not. Yeah, gotcha. That's interesting. Yes. That's a nice detail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting to find that out. But the main star of this story is this James Cullen, Jimmy Cullen. This strange man who's dressed in white and with the high-pitched voice.
I've got a high-pitched voice.
So he does, in both versions, not only on The Extraordinary, but this other interview from the 70s, he refers to this fellow as James or Jimmy Cullen. So I don't know exactly what the spelling would be. I'm assuming it's C-U-L-L-E-N. And if he did exist, he must have died around 52 to 53 or 54 in the Boston area.
Yeah.
As the wife had said, well, she said 2 years before, but in the other version, the earlier version, he said 3 years. It was just very tricky to find any evidence of such a person who could fit that exact profile. And I went looking on Find a Grave, and there've been quite a few James Cullens in the past, very popular name, it seems, in America and Australia and Ireland. And there were a number of James Cullens who had died around that time, but none of them really sounded like they fit the profile, except for one likely candidate. And his name was James F. Cullen, and he was buried in a cemetery in Waltham, Massachusetts, so about 20 minutes away from Boston. And he died January the 5th, 1954, when he was age 57. And so he was in the army. He was in World War One. He was a member of the infantry. And he had a wife. Her name was Corinne or Cora Cullen. And she died in 1966. So there's a possibility that this could have been the person he was talking about. Even still, it's not proof that Telly saw a ghost, of course, or
right.
Maybe it was even someone playing a trick on him. It's really difficult to track this information down so many years afterwards now that he's gone, and it doesn't seem like there's any biographical information where family members have spoken about this story. So it's really difficult. And if he was fudging details, then I think it complicates things as well. Now, we looked into Jimmy's Bar, and we couldn't find one that was owned by a Cullen family in Boston during the 1950s or the 1960s. There is a Jimmy's Bar and Restaurant or something that's, I think, a staple of the area, but it's owned by a different family. And I came across a forum where another researcher was talking about White Castles, because he'd mentioned going into a White Castle restaurant to ask about a petrol station, gas station in the area. But at that time, there weren't any White Castles in the area. And so it was really interesting that this person said, oh, there was a White Tower in the Queens Long Island area, and apparently it was very similar to White Castle. And so to the astonishment of Matt and myself, when we found this original interview, he actually referred to it as a White Tower instead of a White Castle. So it was interesting to see over the years, these little things changing from the original story or the earlier version of it.
It's cool to sort of be doing this sort of dissection too, because, you know, it's like this happened a long time ago. It happened to a celebrity, if it happened. But there's enough details in here, you can just sort of start fact checking some of it, you know. So, which is very cool.
Yes. Oh, certainly. That's interesting. Enough. Even though he doesn't mention the baseball player, you can figure that out.
Yeah, and figure out who it is. And one of the interesting things is that one of the websites we looked at had also seen the earlier version of the story and made a statement that thought was kind of interesting. They said it was different enough that obviously the second one was pure fiction. And that didn't make any sense to me, that you would base, you know, after what, 20 years or, you know, 20 to 30 years of not of you know, the story being told, that there are going to be little differences. And they were little differences. You know, it just seemed weird to me that someone would say, oh, it's got to be fiction because there were differences.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or, say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like, I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
Oh, my God. That's just how memory works. My goodness. Yeah. I mean, what's really funny to me is even though I know memory's malleable, I mean, it is, it's like there's been times when things have happened to me and I've written down the information and I don't go back and look at it. Mm-hmm. I retell the story over time and then I go back and look at it later and I've changed my own story and it's a thing that feels like I know it perfectly, but it's been transformed just by, you know, every time you retell it, you're kind of reconstructing the memory in your brain and it's really easy to introduce, you know, changes. So there's nothing, you don't have to be deceptive to have the story change at all. That's in
Well, yeah, but everything you just said, Blake, you mean it, right? I mean, it's heartfelt. You're telling us the truth. Now, can you repeat it all identically?
No way.
What you just said.
Yeah.
I do find that, you know, there's not evidence that this is fake. There's other evidence that this is fake, but not that.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Well, yeah, let's continue. So some of the things that I find are interesting with the story is just how long the ghostly driver seems to hang around and be involved in this story instead of just vanishing without a trace like in other hitchhiker stories. So he not only interacts with the physical world around Savalas, but he also apports objects for him to use. So he gives him cash and the piece of paper on which he's written his name and his telephone number, and he even helps push Savalas's car. You don't hear many ghost stories where you've got a ghost that's that interactive.
Yeah, and is the Cadillac a ghost car or is it a real car that he's borrowed? I don't know.
Yeah, good question.
I just don't know.
Good question.
It's strange to me that with this encounter, he sees the Cadillac that the man pulls up in, but he never actually heard it as well. But these are things that you don't normally hear about in ghost stories. It's certainly a different one.
Yeah, well, the thing is being a ghost has a certain amount of privilege with it. And one of those privileges is always having an excuse for why you can't help someone move. mm-hmm. So for this ghost not to use that, it raises a red flag right there for me. So
there's a certain film that involves a character who turns out to have been a ghost the whole time. And it's so fun because you watch the movie and you don't realize that that's the big twist. And then later you find out that's the big twist. You want to go back and see it again. And then you realize that this character who's actually supposed to be a ghost is never really interacting in the physical world. Like he's always like walking through open doors and like just everything that you see him doing is not actually picking up things and interacting with things. So that's kind of fun. So
yeah, totally. But this guy does.
Yeah. It's a unique story. But there is a weird postscript to this story too, which you can go and check out on YouTube. Matt, do you want to do the honors again?
Yeah. It's not word for word. This one is just a little bit just off, you know, memory. So correct me if I get any details wrong here. But years later, he's out playing golf with a few friends.
The date's important.
I'm not mentioning the date at the moment because of that. Now, the thing is he always makes sure to name drop when he talks about who he's hanging out with. And he does that with these other golfers. But it has nothing to do with the story. But he's out there playing golf and there's all of a sudden this familiar voice. And he looks up and there's James Cullen up on the hill yelling down to him in that creepy voice.
Did you hear what happened in Dallas?
And Tali was like, what? And kind of yelling back to him. And he didn't respond. And he went over to one of his friends and was like, did you hear that? And the guy's like, yeah. What did he say? So again, there's an interesting interaction with more than one person actually seeing and hearing him. A third
party being involved.
Yeah, a third party. And so they end up, you know, I think back at the clubhouse, if I'm not mistaken. And up on the news, well, I believe it was Walter Cronkite.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
90 minutes before, which is the time that James Cullen made the real scoop on the story.
That's so weird.
It is. And I don't know if this James Cullen was a recurring figure in his life outside of these two stories, but he does finish the interview by saying that this is only part of what happened to him over the course of his life, but he didn't want to discuss the rest. So Matt, one final.
Yeah.
Reading.
Well, one of the things he does in the original storytelling back in the '70s, on the Bill Boggs, interview is he's, you know, oh, the story doesn't end there, but I'm not going to tell you the rest, and just kind of stops short. And then when he tells the story again in the 90s, he does a little bit of that, but then he gets kind of dragged into telling this next part of the story. And then he says, but it doesn't even end there, and I wish the hell it would. That there's more to the story. Now, we'll never know unless it's written somewhere. But that's another thing that makes this seem like such an earnest, you know, thing, is because of the fact that he's admitting he's not telling you everything, you know, because people love to, you know, tell everything they can in a story like this and do everything they can to make you believe. Well, he, you know, tells this very detailed, intricate story, and then he pulls back. Now, is that a theatrical technique he might be using? Because, you know, he was definitely into, you know, different, you know, forms of drama and things like that. But I don't know. It's just a kind of an interesting thing that he will not tell, or he did not tell the rest of the story. And if I had more to tell, well, I would absolutely be telling it.
Well, it's interesting because he's, you know, he's a performer. He's a raconteur. You know, so he likes telling these stories. And when you're in the entertainment business, part of your job is to go on to shows and sort of promote your stuff by being not the character, right? You're supposed to be like, you as an actor are supposed to be interesting. And for some reason, we seem to like carry a lot of, like we put a lot of weight and interest and focus on what actors do. Like, they're not the ones writing the scripts, you know, they're not the ones really doing the things that happen in the stories, but somehow they become these sort of proxies for heroism and macho and all these other sort of values. So, you know, as a person who's plugged into that scene, you know, he had real life accomplishments, but he also is known for being a fictional person. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's a performance in each of these retellings. But yes. But I don't know if he's telling them because they're – I guess here's the thing. It reminds me so much of the Lord Dufferin story, right? Where we and in that story, Lord Dufferin would tell this story as true and as it having happened to him. But he's really taking a piece of folklore and sort of – buffing it up and, you know, personalizing it and then claiming it actually happened to him. And I'm just wondering, did some of this really happen? Or is he making this story up? Or is it like he took a real event and expanded on it? You know, I don't know. It's so peculiar, though, like you say, that a ghost would be driving a real physical car around and that he would ride around in it, you know. Let's pretend for just a minute that we are going to be full ghosties. We're going to say this all is supernatural, right? So if somebody else came by, do they see Telly Savalas get into a car? Like, I mean, he really does come back with gas to put in the car. So that whatever ghostly thing was going on there, it had to be physical enough to tool him around, right? I mean,
So he was, you're saying that did people see him sitting in the air coach. Floating down the road?
Exactly. Would he have been doing that? Because, I mean, the gas is real, you know? I mean, but is he pretending to talk to some, you know, or, yeah.
I'll give you a glass.
Exactly. Do y'all guys hear that? Do you hear that?
Well, you know, here's another kind of interesting point that struck me. Now, of course, this is not, you know, appropriate ever, but it was, we'll say, a little more accepted in the day. I mean, in the 70s when he had that interview, he was tentative about getting into the car because he thought the driver may be homosexual.
Ah.
And Gay. You know, what part does that play into it? Did he feel like he had to give reasons why he may have taken a ride from a gay man? Mm-hmm. You know, because he kept saying, oh, there was no incident. It was completely, you know, lovely and, you know, and what a nice guy to do something like that. And it's like, you know, doth protest a little too much. There just seems like there could be something there that maybe someone did give him a ride. And, and you know, and who knows how it turned out. But now he's constructing things. But then at the same time, we got the fact that he's cheating on his wife. Just left from her. Now, does he need to make up a story on why he's late getting home? Because he was actually living with his mother at that point. He was going out to his mother's house and he knows she's part witch. So he can tell her a crazy story like this and she'll believe it right off the bat. And then it just became the truth over time. I mean, we've got a lot of possibilities here.
Well, there's another thing to consider as well, that if that was the situation, and I think that is a really good theory, that he concocted this story to cover his tracks. And this was the days before there was no-fault divorce in New York. And so perhaps he's seeing this woman on the side and he had to concoct this big story to cover his tracks so that his wife didn't get wind of this and could then use this as information to be able to get money out of him. And apparently he was, like he said in the story, he was broke at that point. And that was one of the reasons that she divorced him, is that he had creditors coming after him and he was running away from them outside of the adultery as well. But I do think that's a really good theory. But I think that there's another interesting postscript to this story, and that is that he died only a few months after he'd given this interview. And that was on January 22nd, 1994, he died of prostate cancer. So this was the last time he had told this story publicly. And it's just sad that he passed away a couple of months after that. So he really took a lot of the answers to the grave, because at this point, all we can really do is come up with theories. And I believe there's some kind of natural explanation behind this story, of course, but it is a really chilling tale. It's a fun one to watch, and I really want everyone to go and check it out to hear him tell it, because he's a very charismatic guy, and he comes across as so earnest as well in his storytelling, and very shaken by the story too.
Yeah, I'm just imagining him getting in the car, or he's walking out to the car to go to the doctor to find out what happened, when he suddenly hears a voice, "I'll give you your lab results," and they're like, "Oh no."
Well, you know, if you believe in this kind of thing, you would think that perhaps this James Cullen met him when he died, when he crossed over, that there was some kind of link there, that he was waiting for him. I mean, it's a creepy thing to think of, but there is a little bit of interesting trivia too. There's an episode of Kojak where he's questioning a suspect and he says to him, "The guy that you're identifying has been dead for 2 years. He blew his brains out up in Boston." So
life,
he did seem to put a lot of himself into his character, you know, with the lollipops. That was apparently because he himself was trying to quit smoking, just like his character. So I'm just wondering if they needed a plot or a storyline here, and he took that from his story. But it just does seem like he was very impacted by whatever happened.
Yeah. He had he was from a big family. He had a lot of brothers who were also either actors or became actors. Mm-hmm. And
in Kojak as well, his brother George was one of the actors.
I watched Kojak when I was a little kid, and I've never really watched it again. So my memories are just remember him saying, "Who loves you, baby?" And that's basically it.
We watched season one, episode one, the other night, and great fun. It was great fun. He was still, didn't have the lollipop yet.
Yeah,
they were didn't love anybody, baby, yet.
That's based on true story, or like the first episode's based on a real murder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So, well, then that'll be a future episode of.
Yeah. Very well dressed and just very enigmatic. And so to hear him tell the story, whether it's true or parts of it are true or whether he's made it up and he's just acting, it's very compelling.
It is.
And the way he tells him, he's so human.
I used the word raconteur earlier, but when I think about that, there's people in my life who are just really good storytellers. And one of those is my Uncle Charles, who was unfortunately going through dementia now. So I think his storytelling days are over. But man, when we used to get to like a family reunion or any kind of get together, you wanted to go sit near Uncle Charlie because he would just tell you all these crazy stories. And every time he told a story, he would draw you in. It was a performance. He might as well have been a bard. You know what I mean? It was like he was, everybody stops drinking and smoking and everybody, you get the attention, and it's like, it was just so good. He was so good at that. And I that's the way I feel about Savalas here. He's got this story down. Mm-hmm. It's a story he's told before. So it's a performance. And he's telling it as earnestly as he can. I don't know if it really happened, but it's if you're the kind of person who carries around interesting stories to whip out at the right moment, you kind of polish them up and treat them special,
Yeah.
But at the same time. Oh, go
ahead. You both said at the same time, That was really weird.
He didn't retell it that many times.
Yeah.
I mean, we have this the interview in the 1970s and then in the 1990s, and we don't have any other examples of him retelling it. And unlike the Lord Dufferin case, where apparently any opportunity he would retell the story to the point where his wife would yawn and complain, oh, here we go again. But it doesn't seem to be that way with Telly Savalas. It seems like he was just very measured in his retelling of the story, which again adds to that kind of allure and seeming as though, well, this is real, and he's only telling it when he's in it. He's really begged to do so.
Well, and then when he does stuff like he talks about going to the clubhouse, and he's like, he's got all this detail on so many things, and then he goes, and then I ordered whatever the hell I ordered. And he's got these little kind of really human moments in it that I think. Draw you in even more because you're like, oh yeah, I can relate to that. I can't remember what I had this morning either. So,
that, and of course his focus is on what had happened. And his retellings. I mean, he does give a lot of detail in the areas that are important. But it just seems strange that he gives the name of James Cullen, but then won't mention the name of the baseball player. And again, that seems like it's him covering his tracks because that would place a date on the event. Even though he tells you he played for the Boston Red Sox, so you can go and look it up yourself.
Yeah, but he's telling this at a time when the internet wasn't really a thing yet. So,
exactly.
True.
Yeah.
True.
The normal person watching this on TV was not going to be able to go click 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 click. Aha!
Right.
So.
Right. Today we can pause television, rewind, write things down, go hit the internet and search to see what's real and what's not real. But let's say this, you've done an interesting approach here. We've taken the original story. We've broken it apart to see what verifiable contents it has. And some of it checks out. So, but what does that ultimately leave us with? I mean, what can we say about this case? There's plausible elements, and then there's a giant supernatural. You're going to have to prove it to me, Telly. But
I just think we need to really look at this as a good story, and that it has these folkloric elements which make it urban legend like. like a vanishing hitchhiker story. And I think that we really need to take away from this. This is a great story. And even though there are some elements, as you say, that could potentially be real, does it even really matter?
I don't know. For me, this is indisputable proof that Bigfoot is real.
Loves you, baby. You're beautiful.
But, some of our listeners may have heard this story too, and perhaps they've got more information. So if anyone does, please get in touch with us and let us know, because this was a really tough nut to crack. There's not that much out there.
It's a cool, creepy story.
When so many people who were involved have passed now, himself and his ex-wife and his lover as well, and James Cullen, apparently.
Yes. Yeah,
and yeah. Harry Aganis, all of these people are gone. So it's impossible to verify. And lots of different theories. You know, it could be that someone was playing an elaborate prank on him, but I still like Matt was the one who came up with the idea that he came up with this story to cover his tracks, and I think that's a good theory.
It is an interesting one. Like, now he says I was on a date, but maybe when he originally told it, that was not part of it. You know, I was right. Just driving home and ran out of gas, and boy, then things got weird.
right. And the thing is Telly has a hard time not bragging about his prowess. So I'm sure that if that part of the story wasn't in it in the beginning, after he was divorced and everything else, he probably couldn't resist, you know, because that's the first thing he says, beautiful young girl since left us. Mm-hmm. So, I think he had a...
I'm surprised he didn't come on to Jimmy Cullen's widow.
Yeah.
Oh, I
well, which I think is evidence that it is the Jimmy Cullen that you think it was, that this was an older woman. This was someone that maybe he wasn't going to just jump right away. But that's probably why he didn't let it go and wanted to meet her before he made that decision.
Yeah, he reminds me of Zeus a little bit. I know he's Greek and, you know, kind of gets around. But anyway.
Yeah, interesting story. He was a very interesting character. It was fun to investigate because I've been scared of this story since I was a kid.
Which is classic monster talk. I guess the thing is, you know, like you say, there's not a lot of proof here, but there's a lot of interesting points. It's a cool thing to investigate. And maybe, you know, like I say, if any of our listeners have any insights or information or more details or anything like that, throw it our way. We'll take a look.
Get in touch. Yep. Sorry.
I've got a clue.
And on that note, thanks for joining us, Matt.
On that high note.
Absolutely.
It's been fun to talk about that. And it was fun to do this research with Matt as well, too. I think we've been joking about that line. I mean, it's irresistible. Once you see that video, you'll never stop saying it.
I'll put some of that audio into the show. And
excellent.
And I think when after the ending, I'll probably throw a little clip of the Paul Bearer from the WWE, so you can get a clip of that. But
also want to say, Karen thanked me for coming on the show and doing the investigation research and everything with her. I always have to say, I'm incredibly impressed with Karen's ability to dig deeper than anyone else on the web has, and she always finds some sort of smoking gun, and it impresses me every time.
That's awesome.
So just wanted to say
thank you.
That.
Yeah, we definitely dug deeper into this one than anyone else has that I've seen. And it's out. The truth is out there.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard a discussion of the celebrity ghost recollections of Telly Savalas with myself, Karen, and frequent show contributor Matt Baxter. Check the show notes for links to Mr. Savalas telling these stories himself. Now, while we're skeptical about the material reality of ghosts, we love a good story well told and like to see what our critical thinking skills and a little research can say about such cases. Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Good Job, Brain, I Know What Scares You, and I know what scares you. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. At Monster Talk, we're always looking into mysteries, but there's one mystery which only you can provide the answer for. Who are you? Airwave Media is doing a network-wide audience survey, and we would love to learn more about you, our listeners, the people who make this show possible with your support and attention. Just go to surveymonkey.com/r/airwave, all one word. So that's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. But don't worry, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Select Monster Talk from the drop-down list of shows and then fill out the simple questions to tell us more about who you are. We hope to hear from you. That's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. Thanks. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. And thanks for all the well wishes sent my way after last week. I'm feeling much better, and it's nice to be able to stop coughing long enough to record this show for all of you.
Been a Monster House presentation.
Jake the Snake Roberts, the clock on my embalming room wall is ticking down. Only 3 weeks away to WrestleMania. Oh, yes, there'll be a funeral in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Loves you, baby. You're beautiful.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.